Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is March, is it 16, I think?
16th. My birthday is 1 month away.
Ides of March was yesterday. Yeah. Beware of the Ides of March.
Also, big happy birthday, 90th birthday to Quincy Jones.
Crazy. Oh
God. Quincy D. Light.
Glad he's still here with us. Glad he's still here
with us.
Him, Mr. Gordy, Smokey Robinson on stage doing all kind of nasty
doing all kind of whining and gyrating.
Yo, them hips did not move from the shoulder line one time. I don't know what your body does at 80 that makes that possible, but I mean, if you like it, I love it.
Exactly. Get it, Smokey. Get it.
Yeah. Somebody buying them tickets.
I'm damn attempted to go to that show just for the chaos.
That's for my mama and them. Smokey is her Negro. You hear me?
Just for the chaos. I know the show is just a bunch of, I ain't gonna, it ain't even aunties. It's like grandmas.
Grandmas. No, for real.
Yeah, it's great aunties.
And they're wilding.
It's great aunties and grandmas. What was I about to say? Oh, for Quincy, man, I'm so happy he's still here. And I want people to, I want people to stop comparing people to Quincy. We've had this conversation.
You can't, man.
Stop comparing
silly.
People to Quincy. Quincy, there will never be anybody else who even comes close to touching the hem of Quincy's garment. Like, you can't, because there is just not, Quincy has been so interwoven in the fabric of modern music history that it's impossible for anybody else. I don't care how prolific. I don't care. Like, people be like, but Pharrell, but this, but no, I don't care how prolific. I don't care how broad. You cannot compare anybody.
And even Pharrell would be like, don't compare me to him. Like, yeah. I'm not that. I mean, you know, thank you, but I am not that at all. Like, just please chill out, you know?
Because Michael wasn't even the pinnacle. That's the crazy shit. Like, Michael wasn't, like, before Michael, like, Frank Sinatra's band leader, like, you know what I'm
Sanford
saying?
Like, the Sun theme song.
Scoring music, you know, you were scoring movie music and TV music and producing. He can conduct
TV shows.
You know,
Ironside theme.
There is nothing this man hasn't. He can do everything from big band to jazz to classical to pop to R&B. Like, come on.
And also, the
only reason he don't play anymore is because he would die. Like,
because he's 90. And also,
no, because he had
aneurysm. Because of his brain injury.
His doctor told him to stop playing trumpet.
But also, like, and just like with Michael and some other people from that era, you're never going to get that again because the people.
It can't happen again.
Yeah, but also because, like, the way they were raised. Like
right.
Now there's so much government involved. Like, you know, Quincy, you know, his mom was, I don't know if she was schizophrenic or a drug addict, but he moved from Chicago to Seattle and him and his brother was on his own. And then he got picked up at 15 to be in a big band. Like, that just won't happen.
That wouldn't happen today.
It would not happen today. It'd be government intervention. And he'd be, it just, like, the way those, even with Michael, like, the way
government.
He was.
No, well,
no, but for real, though. Like, they would.
Legal intervention. Like, how
you know
what
I'm saying? It just wouldn't, those things wouldn't just occur in those ways anymore. You
right,
know,
because
Michael,
now,
like, you
because
know, Michael,
now folks be like, that's a danger to the children.
Exactly, exactly. No, seriously though, like, this guy was 15 years old and he was on the road with Count Basie. This is crazy. That wouldn't happen.
No, it's
but
real.
that was also the time period, right? Like,
it's
we also have
14
to remember.
Was grown. Basically,
like, you was out the house by 16.
Yeah,
like 16, like, you was
and
a grown man.
Yeah, like, you were down to the plant. You had to bring some weight.
Yeah.
Girls were married to Mister. So
exactly,
yeah, like,
exactly.
Yeah.
So
it's
those, it just wouldn't happen in that way anymore for a 15-year-old kid to go on a road with literally grown ass men. and women,
grown ass people.
And
if we being real,
and learn from those people.
If we being real, that just stopped. Like, where do you think Jermaine Dupri was at 13?
Well, that's what I was about to say. I think Gen X is the last generation that really got, like, my boyfriend's kids were here over the weekend, and the 9-year-old was like, well, she'll be 10 in a few months, but she was like, I could legally be home by myself for a half an hour. I was like, a half an hour? Yo, age, I was home by myself.
I had a key around my neck. I was like, exactly. A half
years old. Making a grilled cheese sandwich.
Oh, we could use those
chicken tenders.
Yeah, oh yeah.
We had to make cheese sandwiches.
Oh, you can make
it. I couldn't touch the stove.
I could use the stove.
Mama said you can't be on that stove.
I could make pot pies, fried bologna, ramen noodles, like fried hot dogs. Like, I had specific stuff. Like,
not until I got to the fifth grade. Once I got to the fifth grade, I could make some raviolis. So that was my after school come home right quick.
Yeah, and get that homework done.
1,700 milligrams of sodium per serving.
And then my shit was like
a scrambled egg, some toast and applesauce. I think I ate that every day after school from the time I was like eight to like 13.
Wow. Yeah. So yeah,
my mother had to teach me how to cook because I was too picky and eater. She was like, listen, little girl,
you're gonna figure this shit out.
You can have what you want, but you're gonna make it.
You know,
mom would be like, that spaghetti is in there.
It's spaghetti in there.
I wanted to first mention, I was on a plane, I went to New Orleans for one day on Sunday, and I watched the George.
That's your first time traveling in a while, right?
First time traveling since I moved, because I've been here. I've been here since last June. That's the first time I'm on a plane. Wow. It's been a while, but I got it right back. I had my clear, went on through, made it through.
Amen.
Amen. Something to my mind. So years ago, I did sign this group, The Pack, when I worked at Jive. And they lived in Berkeley, actually. And so we went out there to see him, and God bless him, Chris Lighty. He was like, I'm going to go out there with you, man. So me and him went on a plane to San Francisco. We took the kids and their mother, because they were children. They were like 16 and 14 at the time. So we took the kids and their mothers to dinner in Oakland. Had a great dinner. We were supposed to spend a night. And he was like, yo, we going back tonight. I was like, nigga, in San Francisco, what are you talking about? Yo, we don't catch your last plane tonight. And I literally watched him turn into road manager Chris. Like, we got through the airport. We literally were running through the airport, like, to catch the last plane, got on the last plane, it was JetBlue, that TV. That just jumped in my mind for some reason. But anyway, I was watching this George Michael documentary called Freedom 90 Uncut. And George Michael actually did this documentary before he died.
Oh, I don't think
yeah, I wasn't up on it. I just saw it on the thing. It was really interesting, man. It was him, and he narrated it in his voice, and he just talked about his life from beginning to sadly the end, and how, you know, he described the Sony court case when he wanted to get off the label. He described, you know, the Wham phenomena, and how he said he really chased fame. He said when he was young, he said he wanted it. He was like, yeah, I want this shit, which is why he went solo. He was like, Angelo's my boy. Like, I love him for life, but I wanted to be as big as Michael, Prince, and Madonna. I wanted that
and
shit.
He was.
1988, he was the biggest artist in the world.
He was young, too. Good Lord.
Obviously, the vocals was crazy. He could write his ass off. I didn't remember this. He talked about, I guess it was 87 or 88. He won two R&B AMAs. And it was AMAs, a big backlash.
And there was a lot of backlash about it for him being white and winning R&B AMAs.
Yeah.
And it was around the same time that they were giving
Bobby Brown
a hard time.
And he beat Bobby Brown that year.
Yeah. I do remember that. Because Careless Whisper was Carol's, I heard Carol's Whisper on R&B radio. All I remember that.
On radio. The whole Faith album was on Black radio.
Everything, and not even that. Everything just Faith album. I remember Everything She Wants was on R&B radio. I remember finding Everything She Wants again when LimeWire came out. That was one of the first songs I went and found because I had not heard it. And like people, some of y'all, even our listeners, I think don't really remember what it was like to like not hear a song for like straight up a decade
because you didn't own it. Yeah,
not be able to find it. DJs was spinning it. It wasn't on the radio. Like you couldn't look it up on you. Like it just was not there. Yeah. And y'all remember LimeWire spending so much time finding songs I hadn't heard forever. Everything I ran
and corrupting your computer in the process.
The whole joint trying to find the right file with the whole song and the. But y'all remember finding Everything She Wants and just like being so happy to hear. Yeah.
It was just a really interesting doc. It was like, you know,
and George, about, speaking of like young people, George wrote Careless Whisper, I think, when he was like teenager. 17.
Teenager. He was a teenager. He was 17. Yep. Crazy. He was 17. Because when the Faith album came out, he was only 24, 23, 24.
Wow.
Like he was, yeah, also it was just a really a good doc. Story
that would not happen today.
No. Right. Right.
No. No, but I didn't remember the backlash. And when he was on stage, he thanked Black Radio. He thanked the Columbia Black staff. Like he was really like, you know, it was just a really interesting doc. You get a chance to check it out. Check it out.
I think what's also interesting about that time period is like, you know, that was in that kind of synth pop era, even though I don't consider George synth pop, but like we had all the imports from Europe.
A lot of England.
Yep. Yeah. Play on Black radio, but also like the Quiet Storm format left room for a lot of that.
Father like, figure.
You think about Art of Noise is was a regular on Quiet. You know what I'm saying? Like it left room for a lot of that.
Yeah,
Tears for Fear, Simply Red, like all of that.
Well, Tears for Fears too. I mean, it was on Black Radio too. With Shout, you know, it was a lot of stuff. You know, want to give a RIP to Black artist Bobby Caldwell, who passed away.
Uncle Bobby
got his wings about 2 days ago. 74 years old.
He'd been ill for a while.
Yeah, he had been ill for a while. I still remember as a kid going to the record store, as Prince would say. And the What You Won't Do for Love 45. I mean, sorry to, you know, y'all probably remember that. But the 45 was shaped like a heart. It was a red heart.
Oh, word?
It was a red heart.
Wow.
And I saw a picture of that.
You saw that, right? Yep. It's fun as a heart. Yep. And that was a huge, again, another white artist that was massive. I mean, he was only on Black radio, really.
He was really only on Black radio.
Well, yeah, I was reading the thing. Oh, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, Bobby, before he got ill, would be active on Twitter. And he loved to randomly chime in when people were discovering he was white. For the first time, like, he would jump in the comments or, like, the tweets. Like, he clearly got a kick out of it. Sean, is that your mother-in-law? Somebody looking for you.
So you're shooting back, yeah.
I do want to say, I just lost my train of thought because I was all in Sean's video.
You about to say something about Bobby?
Yeah. Us not knowing that he was white was by design. Mm-hmm. His first album cover, he was a picture of him sitting on a bench, but it was a blacked out silhouette.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody knew until he went on tour. And
that was the same thing with Tina Marie. Motown put out James and Barry were like, Rick and Barry were like, nah, we ain't putting your picture out
ever. Yeah, I think
public joint was Soul Train or something like that. So
that's what you could do back then when your artwork mattered, you know?
Yeah, well, we talk about it a lot with Black artists who people white labeled it and put their picture on it, but it happened with white artists who were being marketed to Black people too.
I remember years ago, wasn't that long. I guess it's probably 20 years ago now. Shit, now I'm thinking about it. There was still CDs at the time, and Epic sent out a CD and said, check this out. And it was Babyface. Remember the record that Pharrell produced for Babyface?
Yeah, There She Goes.
There She Goes. But there was no cover.
That was Arista.
Was it Faces on Arista?
Yeah, L.A. signed them as an artist.
Okay.
Yeah.
There was no cover because they didn't want people to prejudice Babyface and kind of put him into adult music, adult R&B rather.
That song was a bop.
That show was dope. Yeah, yeah.
That song was a bop. But that project didn't work.
Yeah, yeah. But that was a good song.
Because it was bass. You know what I'm saying? But it was a great song.
But so peace to Bobby Caldwell and his family. Bruh, just got to say it, man. Mona Me Entertainment strikes again, brother. Y'all got a hit on your hands.
Oh, yeah, I'm finally caught up. Ooh,
y'all got a hit on your hands.
That's the
escape record.
I just have a question. Y'all know that these dynamics existed, or were y'all in it for the show? Like, just let's see how we get them to tour together. Did you know all this other stuff was happening?
We know you can't say but so much, but you know, whatever you can say.
So prior to this show, there was an escape show, I believe that was 2017.
I remember that.
So yeah, there was like obviously things have changed over those years, but there was always like we kind of knew that there were some dynamics there, particularly about the Tasha and Candy. You know what I'm saying? Like the Tasha and Candy thing is just not like there's no secret about that. I think both of them have been fairly vocal about how they feel about each other. I don't think anyone holds anything back at this point. So, the SWV was kind of the variable of the situation. So, that's probably where I should cut it off.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. We know you can't say that so much.
I came home and my boyfriend was watching it. He was like, this is good. Like, even he was in it.
It's top notch.
I know, I'm surprised, and Sean, I know you can't speak on this. I'm surprised Rocky ain't blowing y'all's phone up, because you can always tell when people are saying stuff they think the cameras aren't actually going to use.
Yeah.
Like when Tasha was sitting for her interview, and Rocky was whispering in her ear, and they were like, what are you telling her? And he was like, what's she supposed to say? I was like, that nigga has no idea that is game for air. Like, they never.
Bravo is extremely shady with the cuts. We know from watching reunions, you say a thing and then they immediately flash back to whatever contradicts the thing that you just said.
I was like, either you have never watched reality, because like you can't game the cameras. Sean has said this before, you cannot game the cameras. So either
you can't game the microphones.
Like there ain't no action and cut. Like if them cameras are set up and your mic is on,
you got to zoom.
It's hot and it's rolling.
Yeah, it's hot until them cameras leave the house. And even then, like, get them cameras out of my house. that's the other person. I mean, I know that Tamika and Tasha's mom did not expect to get this blowback. I would assume that she didn't expect this to happen.
The camera catching her off camera, kind of mouthing the words, she's jealous. Yeah. When Tamika and Tasha were having that argument was golden television. Like it just explained everything to me right in that like 1 minute clip. Go ahead, Sean, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I was just going to say, I don't know. And this is just me speaking personally outside of anything. She lives in a different world than how we operate and how we move, right? Like this is a woman of a certain age. This is a woman of a certain circle. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know that Sister
Shane
Jones
on Twitter.
Yeah, I don't know that Sister Jones and Deacon Watkins is coming, you know, to talk about what happened on the show last week. You feel what I'm saying? So
they come and
I think her social circle is not it's not banishing to her, right? And listen, I mean, at the end of the day, again, I say this broadly. I don't know any specifics, and I don't ever want to sound like I'm being dismissive of anyone's feelings, particularly someone's mom. So I just want to make sure that, you know, I'm just saying this doesn't seem like a young mom, right? Like it doesn't seem like she's, you know, she going down to the supermarket. She got four or five errands she run every week. Yep. It's the
church
same
on
errands.
Sunday.
Yeah, the same places. And so I don't know that her social circle is putting her in that pariah space.
But it's great reality TV, man. It's Bravo's back on their shit with this one and leading into there's the new Married to the Medicine season getting ready to start up with a brand new cast, and that's going to be.
Yeah, I think I'm checked out. I think I'm checked out on them. I saw a couple additions that just, I particularly like that show,
mm-hmm.
Because of the sort of real and raw nature that those friendships have, right? Mm-hmm. Like Eugene and Cecil look like they hang out together.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, show though.
Yeah. I just think when you start to throw in these other things into the mix, these other additions, right? Like, I think it just throws off the chemistry. Mm-hmm. From the viewer's experience. I'm not talking about from their experience or from the taping experience, from the viewer experience.
It's fully messy to bring back Quad's ex-husband with the new wife.
Yeah, sure. Like so like I'm not really I'm good. I'm good. I want to keep my Married to the Medicines memories
pure.
As pure as reality TV allows.
Yeah.
We will certainly let you know what happens.
Yeah, because I'm a rock out. Yeah. We in. But SWV, the Queens of R&B is actually the title of the show. It's a great show. If you're not watching it, I'm actually surprised you're not. And if you're not, you should catch. There's only two episodes in, so it's very easy to catch up. And it's a great show.
Very short season. It's only a 6-episode run. It's a very short session here. So, I mean, it's you know, you can easily binge and catch up, and you can easily binge, right?
Yeah,
but, you know, easily. we would prefer you watch within 7 days.
Yeah, of course.
Is there a reunion?
No comment.
No comment at this time.
Okay.
But the group chat might be on fire a little bit later.
I'm just asking because I know that this rolls into the new season of Atlanta.
Yeah.
Which, shout out to Candy Burris, because this is now season 15, and she's been on that show since season
15? Wow.
Season 15 is coming up. And you know, sometimes they kind of run into each other, in a year. But that's like an achievement. Like, do you get an award for that?
It's a
that's
lot.
Some OG
that's a lot
shit
of TV,
that yeah. Even OC is not on that level with OGs. Like, Candy is the last one, really.
Yeah, she's the last woman standing. Wanted to mention, I started watching this show because a friend to the show, KMGZ, called Outlast. It's on Netflix. And it's
I saw previews for that.
Yeah, it's a show about, I think it was started off with 16 contestants, and they basically just dropped them in the middle of Alaska with literally nothing.
That is something you would watch.
Yeah. And they just got to figure out how to survive. And the twist of it is you have to survive as a team. It's not Survivor. So you got to be with a team. And like, you know, it's in the middle of Alaska. It's in the fall going into the winter. So the conditions are brutal. It's cold.
Listen, I spent 12 hours in Alaska one time. Something happened with our plane. And my coat, because I was going somewhere warm, was in my luggage. We didn't have access to the luggage.
Shit.
The airport closed. And let me tell you how, when I walked out of those sliding doors, like, I immediately started crying because that's how cold it was in Alaska. It was very beautiful. And this was like October. So I know, like, we were just on the cusp. I don't know how anybody is out there. I had on like a hoodie. I literally started crying. Like, a stranger, this dude came up, was like, did you want to ride to IHOP or something? Like, we're going to go get breakfast. I was like, I will join you.
Yeah, so, just go somewhere warm.
I still remember his name. His name was Tim, and he was the nicest man ever. And he kind of hung out with us for the 12 hours that we were stranded in Juneau, Alaska. So,
yeah, that show was crazy.
Tell you, it's no joke how cold it is out there.
They sleeping in the woods outside.
What compels you to decide this is some shit you're going to do with your life?
Because, I mean, privilege, and they consider themselves outdoorsmen. And I could tell you, like, one person checked out first day. It was like, nope, 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 nope. And then the second show, we people checked out. Because what happens if you check out, you shoot a flare into the sky and then a boat comes to get you. Like, people are checking out immediately.
Fully understand.
You literally have nothing. You have no food. You have no water. Absolutely you have not. No nothing. The show is wild. And of course, then they're going to start going at each other. And all. So I'm watching that.
That's the thing. Like, even all these outdoors people and survivalists and whatever, like, soft bees. This is why I always say that Americans ain't actually ready for war on our own land. We're not ready for rations. We're not ready for none of
that. Here's my theory. Whites, specifically white men in America, have it so easy. They have to challenge themselves in ways that will, you know, make their chances for survival next to none.
Yeah, yeah. But for them, it's like a game. You know, they buy the best equipment and it's sexy, and you know what I mean.
Like, but they buy for us, everyday living is ghetto as hell already.
Shit.
So
I'm real shit. Yep.
Not going to Alaska with just a coat on, B. Like,
nope.
That,
literally,
that
and that's literally what they exist. Got. That's literally what they got. No, just the clothes on their back.
Nope.
I did not survive the 80s and crack to check out because it's too cold, nigga. You fucking serious?
To go be cold and uncomfortable. And listen, I've already said if any kind of apocalypse happens, zombie apocalypse, real apocalypse, four horsemen come riding in, I'm charging all my devices, I'm getting snacks, I'm wrapping myself up in a blanket, and when the batteries die or I die, whichever comes first, I'm going to inherit my kingdom of God. Like, I'm going to be with the Lord. Oh, yeah, I'm not going to be out here trying to
fight. This last week, and it's still
trying
stands.
To fight other people for water and candy goods. But no, I'm not doing it. I'm not in my father's That's house. Great. There are many mansions. If it was not so, he would have told me. I'm going to go be comfortable put on my robe and walk around.
Put on your white robe. You put on your white robe and your golden slippers.
Exactly. I'll be over yonder. Yeah, I'm going up to. Do not look for me to put on your apocalypse team. I ain't planting no seeds. I ain't fucking distilling no water. I ain't getting no
carbon. Well, I'm gonna give up a fight. I'm gonna give up a fight now. Ain't gonna be no easy win. Ain't gonna be no easy win over here.
Yo, bro, I think we actually would like the show. You should check it out. It's called Outlast on Netflix. Okay. It's a wild one. Now you want to talk about Inky, you want to talk about the last episode of Last of Us?
I will. Before I do that, because I'm gonna forget. I just want to give a shout out to Common, who I found out was dating Jennifer Hudson. And I just want to say that nigga's ability to make his way around Black Hollywood is
he's knocking phenomenal. Everything down. Jennifer Hudson actually makes sense to me only because they're both from Southside.
From Chicago. Apparently they used to date.
I could see that. I could see that. They probably know each other from home.
My thing was, like, I was kind of surprised that somebody from the crib was there. Because, like, the thing is that Common is the eternal boyfriend. And he is actually kind of like Black Hollywood good luck Chuck, even. Like, the guy you date before you date the guy you're going to marry.
Called a good luck Chuck?
It's a movie called Good Luck Chuck, where women date this man, and after he breaks up with them, they find a guy, they date the guy that they end up marrying. So women start trying to date him on purpose to get to the guy they're going to marry. Okay. But it's like from years ago. But the thing about it is that I was thinking about it yesterday and I was like, I kind of see it. Like, if you're an award-winning black woman of a certain age, right? If you're at a certain certain level of stature in your career, Common is Oscar-winning, corporate brand friendly, he's hip-hop. In social justice and philanthropic circles, but he's still hip hop. He's still, Chicago. He's still street. So you can take him to the black tie fancy stuff. You can take him to the White House if you got to go. But also, like, he could probably be on a space table. But you know what I mean? So
for Thanksgiving.
I get it, because there aren't a lot of single black men in that realm.
And he's a nice guy.
Of that age. And he's a nice guy. I think he's probably boring, which is, I think, part of what happens in his relationships, unfortunately. And I used to have the biggest crush on Common, so it pains me to say that.
Nigga, flowers again, nigga.
Nigga, all right, nigga. You cooking dinner again, nigga? Damn.
He don't seem super deep. I'm not saying he seems stupid. He just don't seem super deep to me. That's all.
And he's not, like, funny.
Yeah, right?
I need a little more, like, sparkle in your personality.
Like, for somebody whose voiceover we hear so much, he doesn't really say a lot. I think that's probably what happened with him and Robin Thede. Like, he don't really say.
Well, he dated Robin Thede.
Robin Thede?
Yeah.
I didn't know about that one.
They were together for a minute.
I need like a Daily Mail or like an article that with, you know how they put the person in the middle and then all the photos around
of the people that they didn't around.
I need that for comment.
Well, but the funny about Tommy is that, what I will say is that he has no type. It's like, you a black woman, let's go.
Yeah. Like,
yeah, and he age and he dates age appropriate. So I am always okay with that.
True. Yeah, he don't be dating no 20-year-olds and
he's never getting married, which is why I think Tiffany had this realized. I think Tiffany really thought like this was about to be it. It was about to be Mr. and Mrs. I really think she bought that, and I really think she was upset when she realized that wasn't the case. But everybody else
is just like a serial monogamous.
He's a serial monogamous, and I don't think Jennifer Hudson wants to get married. So maybe this is the one that really
maybe
wants.
It'll
I just want to give a shout out to Common for being like the eternal black A-lister boyfriend, like for real.
Giving
black women of a certain age out here options. So that they don't have to date reality shows.
Also, one of the things, and I'll just add this, is that he is, as someone in that world and in that space, we understand all the ancillary things, but he also understands the intimate things, right? So there is a level of being able to communicate with him about the things that frustrate you in a way that you can't necessarily do, even if your guy works for like Merrill Lynch or whatever. So this isn't like just income based. It's also world based. And he understands that, right? So if you have a 16-hour day, right, and he has to move some things around, he's not going to necessarily trip. Yeah. Because he understands that world.
Yeah, he understands. You know, you got a late call or whatever. Real quick, I want to just mention your man Tyrese.
What happened? I refuse to watch this clip.
Okay, so he was on Sway in the Morning, and he talked about two. There was two things. One thing I will give him. He said that he's never done drugs in his life. He doesn't smoke, doesn't drink, anything like that. And he said that. They had put him on some medication, I guess, for, I don't know if it's for bipolar, but, you know, for mental stability, for lack of a better term.
I feel like that nigga needs something.
That's why he was tripping and doing that. What else he want from me? And all those videos.
Start small. 5 milligrams of Adderall might, like, get him anywhere.
Yeah, he said they put him on something. He was over the top talking about when he was talking about Will Smith owing $5 million and all that. He was like, I was tripping. I don't even remember saying that. And so that part I get. But then he said another part where he said his ex, he's never was married. So his ex-girl, I guess, she comes to drop.
Ex-fiance comes
to drop the child off. And he's like, she drops the child off with the nanny. He said, when she drops the child off, I'd be standing in the window. She can't see me because the window's tinted, but I'd be standing there watching her. And she'll drop the child with the nanny, get in her car and drive off. And she doesn't ever like act like, I'm misquoting it, but he's basically saying like she never acts like she misses the house. He's like, this is the house we made our baby. This is the house that we were going to get married.
He want her to stand in the driveway and just get it.
Yes, that's what
he literally said that. I want her to just look up and be like, damn, like at the house.
Nigga, fuck you. And your
house.
She's
dropping the kids off. She ready to be outside.
Yeah, exactly.
She's like, dumbass in the house.
Yeah, he said she drops the kids off.
she dropping that kid off because she done went and got waxed. And she ready to rock and roll for the evening,
exactly.
My man.
You lucky. She ain't thinking about you
at all. She want to know what the time to show and getting off work.
But like, also, it's like, you want her to miss the house, not miss your dumb ass. The whole thing is just faulty on so many different
Well, levels. Also, she probably doesn't have good memories in the house.
Exactly, because that motherfucker's crazy.
But I think that is, and that kind of goes to what we had talked about a little bit before, just kind of when you center everything in the provider role, like that is the only, that's essentially all you've ever been, mm-hmm. right? So the idea is that this bigger house is better, right? Not that it was a home or that I have great memories here.
But how can you not miss this life?
It was loving. It's how can you not miss this space and how can you not miss these things, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah. So I have a question. What what did Sway ask him? Because again, I saw the clip, but I refused.
He didn't really ask him anything.
What did Sway ask him to make him get up out his chair?
I didn't see that, but he just, Tyrese was just going.
Are you serious?
He asked him about a song. He's like, so you got a new song that's coming out. Tell us how you got that. Something like that.
Oh my God.
And Tyrese just went. You know, he just started being Tyrese. Nigga was acting, and yeah, it was a trip, man.
I know Sway be like, why me? Why does this shit? I just tried to ask questions.
But like Russ said, like if you centered your whole existence isn't the right term, but if you centered your whole
identity
on just being the provider only. And we see this all the time, you know, with the Kevin Samuels generation and some old people older than that too. Then once a woman kind of gets away from that, you don't know what to do because it's like, right. Hey, man, I pay all the bills. I bought the check home. I got us a house. I got you a car, which is all nice. But if that's the only thing you're doing, you're not doing anything, any of the emotional things or the other right. things that.
But also, if you're doing it as a form of control, which I think is what Tyrese is on, like, because I remember the one thing I do remember about him and this chick is that, like, when she left the relationship, he was having this, I don't want to say outsized reaction, outsized public reaction, I'll say. But people were like, you dated a young woman hoping you can control her, and now you're mad because a young woman wants to be. A young woman. Like she wanted to be outside. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, it's that this is the part of the math these Negroes these men, because it's not just a black man thing, don't do, is they talk about how they want a younger woman who they can mold and be docile. And they may not openly say this, but who is easily impressed with certain trappings without having to do any real labor. But then when she does young shit, it's like, oh my, it's like you're shocked. You know what I mean?
Yeah, how could you? How could you?
Right.
You know, I mean, that was OJ Simpson. I mean, he took it to the extreme, but that was it. Nicole was much younger than him, and he was obviously a superstar and felt like, you know.
And Nicole was a hot girl.
It was a hot girl, and he felt like, you know, she's with me. She's good to go. But like you said, she's. 27 years old.
Hell of a comparison, bro.
What I will say is
where
Jeff just made a really apt comparison is the absolute outrage at the nerve of this woman to not be pleased with all that you can offer That's her fair. Alone. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like with this absolute like anger and rage about how dare this not be enough for you. And the funny thing is these are the same dudes who be talking about people being gold diggers, but this is what you, this is
this all how you start offer. The process. Yeah. Exactly. This is how you start the process. Like,
this
yeah.
is all you offer.
Yeah. So you're shocked, you know, so.
I don't know how you pulled that out of the recesses of your brain either, Jeff, but there was that app. I don't want to negate what Iku was saying, but there was a connection there.
It's fair. It's OJ. Did y'all watch the documentary about the flight MH370 on Netflix?
No, but we know you did.
I definitely did. Did you watch it, bro?
I ain't watch it yet. I'm a dig into it. I gotta prep myself for my tinfoil watching material.
Yeah.
I can't just cold watch conspiracy shit. Like I gotta warm myself up. So I'm gonna watch it
over the windows and
yeah, I'm gonna watch it because you my man, and I know that I want to be able to kick it with you. You and Kelly are absolutely 100,000% convinced that the aliens got that plane. So I got to prep myself for whatever comes on that.
All I'm going to say is it's a really well done doc. I'm not going to spoil it. It's a really well done doc, but nothing in the doc. And, it's, you know, I think it's three episodes. So it's not long, you know, long series. But nothing in the doc convinces me that the aliens didn't take that plane. That's all I'm going to say. I ain't seen nothing. Be like, oh, okay, nope.
The aliens can tap into this program right now and tell you we don't have that plane, and you still hey, gonna be like, nah, they lying, they lying,
They got this shit. They got that shit up there. That's all I'm gonna say. That's all I'm gonna say. They got it. I wanted to mention Juan Dixon was let
Wandering go from, Dixon himself
let go from Coppin State this past week. They say for various things,
but being messy.
Also, his winning record is his record at the time he's been there is something like 51-140.
Like, he was in a gots to go. Yeah. He was in a gots to go, my nigga.
This was gonna happen. Yeah. This just helped it along.
So like, college basketball is just a nasty business. Like, we kind of know that. And the two things that you can't do is be an HR problem and lose. You got to pick one, okay? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, you could be an HR problem if y'all are winning divisions and going to the NCAA tournament. Yeah. And
like Jerry Tarkanian and all that. We'll figure it out.
You can't be doing this, bro. And really, I don't think Juan is ever going to coach again on any major collegiate level. I think that his only saving grace might be someone giving him a shot and throwing him a bone as a low-level assistant in a G League-type situation where maybe he works his way back in. You just cannot allow what occurred for the man in charge and the leader of that organization. You cannot allow him to be in charge of young men ever again. Like, no. You just can't do it. It would be an absolute slap in the face. You know what I'm saying? Like, Patrick Ewing got fired as well, but we know that Patrick Ewing's situation is purely based on a results situation, right? So maybe Patrick shows up at a mid-major or some small school.
Or an assistant coach in the NBA, because that's what he was doing before, you know?
Yeah, right. But you know, the reality is that Juan had to go. It was very, very, it was terrible how all of this was handled. He looked like a poor leader, and that is what is expected of a head coach, particularly a head coach of young men and young people, I should say, because this is also expected of the girls coaches and you know, and any other sports. So it was just bad all around. And, you know, I don't know what his plan is, because like, if the coaching thing doesn't work out, like, you know, he's still very young, like in the grand scheme of living a life. So I would have to hope
no employable skills to speak of that we've seen yet.
Yeah, I'm hoping, you know, listen, man, there's always going to be, they won a national championship. So there's probably some insurance company with an alum that owns it,
you know, booster
down in Maryland, and booster somebody that'll give them, you know, hey man, come down here, sell some insurance. You know, get your little State Farm office or something. And you know, down next to the beauty supply.
I should be laughing because it's so real.
But that's a very real transition for a lot of those guys, right? Like when they don't.
I know it's a very real transition for a lot of the players who don't get drafted too.
Yeah, because they're gonna track people.
Come to the car lot.
Juan gonna track people based on his name, especially in Baltimore. Like, they're gonna come to just because.
And listen, man, the reality is he's a tall, he's a good looking guy. He's got some charismatic skills, right? Like, but to Nas' point, there's nothing that is like transferable, right? Like, this is not a guy that's going to go into the C-suite area. He's not going into senior VP of anything. Right.
I'm also not trusting you with my 17 to 19 year old kids, bro. Like, just get ever. Out of here with that.
In fact, how about you don't even coach the kids for free? How about we just,
you know, high school shit.
Drop off Corey Carter to the
game. Don't even do this AAU team, like none of it.
At all. None of it, my nigga. None of it.
So yeah, are we peace gonna to him.
Segue into the, did we talk about the end of Potomac?
Yeah, we talked about that.
I think so.
We did? Okay.
Yeah, we talked about that. And allegedly, Robin is, they're talking about making Robin a friend of the show. which
she needs to be off altogether. She's been boring for 7
years. Yeah, which decreases her pay. So it's tough right now for the Dixon household. I God bless.
LinkedIn is good.
But real quick, we didn't mention. So Last of Us season finale was this past week.
So I feel, I don't know how I feel about the season finale.
I didn't love it, but I liked it. But I always watch the YouTube reviews and everything. And that's basically the end of the first part of the game.
Yeah. The show's been very true to game. And I'm actually going to get the first part of the game. I want to actually go through the gameplay because when I first started watching, I haven't read as many, but I was reading a couple of recaps of like the first maybe 3 episodes or so. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about the parallels between gameplay.
Yeah. Some scenes are like lifted directly out of the game.
Words and everything. Where they get barricaded in, I think it's Kansas City or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like that's directly out of the game. So, and there's a lot of dialogue that's directly out of the game as well.
A lot.
So I do want to play through the game, but it felt like, and again, through the game, so I can't be mad, but it felt like in my mind, and this is my own problem because sometimes I can't suspend disbelief for the sake of plot, but I was just like, y'all went through all of that. You know what I mean? Like you went through all of that. All this weight, all this time, all them near-death experiences, all that shit. And like this is what it was all for. Like that part just, it's not so much me being mad at the writers or the plot or anything. It's just me being mad at the reality of it in that universe, you know. But you know, I also want to give a shout out to the actress who plays Grace Greenleaf. She all over the place. Because she's also on Truth Be Told with Octavia Spencer. She plays Macaw Pfeiffer's wife.
Gabrielle Union.
It just, so I'm curious to see what season 2 will bring, because obviously there's going to be a season 2.
Yeah, there's a bunch of new characters, but I did like we got some more backstory on Ellie.
I liked it.
You know how she was born, and you saw like, Ellie's
a hell of a character.
Yeah, and you saw a change in her, like in this episode, like she became more solemn and more like retrospective. And
well, she also knows Homeboy's lying to her.
Oh, definitely knows.
She definitely
knows Joel. She knows Joel's lying.
Yeah, I think that Ellie may have been okay with being a sacrifice.
Yeah, she is. She was. Yeah. She was actually. In the game, she's actually mad at him for saving her. Because she's like, look, I could have possibly saved humanity instead of you just saving me, and now this world is still chaos. So it was good. Did you watch it, Inka? You didn't watch it? I know Brian
watched
it. I know Brian watched it. So yeah, so that was the end of that.
It's
a good series.
Also,
though.
Shout out to Homegirl. She ain't a Smollett. What's that girl's name? The one who plays Rue's little sister in Euphoria.
Oh, Storm Reid.
Yeah, Storm Reid. I always want to say she's a Smollett and she's not a Smollett.
not a Smollett.
Smollett. What's the name?
She ain't related to them at all.
Smollett. No, it's Smollett.
Smollett. I always want to say she's one of them, but she ain't. She's just light-skinned. But shout out to her because she gets these really great little... They're small character roles, but she does so much.
Killing it.
She does so much with them. I'm excited to see what she continues to do as she gets older.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's a great actress. I like her a lot. Let's talk about Laura Roach, because Inka got some stuff to say. So Laura Roach is a famous stylist. He's
more than that, but I'm going to let you cook.
Okay, cool. Okay, well,
on the styling side, does Zendaya, he does Celine. Like, he's basically...
Doesn't he do, what...
All of a sudden becoming, like, this fashion icon.
Yeah, why am I blanking on her name? From Insecure.
Issa Rae?
No. Issa Rae. I think he does that, too.
No, that's Wayman and Micah do Issa, I think.
Yeah. Okay. But, yeah, he does a lot of big people, and he's, done a lot. So wait, what is he besides the stylist? I didn't know nothing about this kid until this shit happened.
So La
you break
Roche
it down in. You break it down in.
Coined the term and calls himself an image architect because he likes to be in charge of the full image of a person. He is most notable for his transformation of Zendaya's image from being a Disney child star to now the person we look for on the red carpet. There's a million different, you know, accolades and achievements. He is a contributing editor for British Vogue. He's the first ever stylist to win a stylist award at the CFDAs.
Oh, I didn't know that.
All the like memorable looks from the Met Gala, he's responsible for. He does collaborations with Hervé Leger. He has a line with them.
Okay.
He helped with Tommy Hilfiger's line with Zendaya. He's an ambassador to Louis Vuitton. He is a judge and a coach on Legendary, as well as America's Next Top Model. He changed the game for styling as we know it.
He's also since Meg started doing real fashion, that was Law stepped in.
Yes.
So you could usually tell once Law got in the game.
You can tell the transformation. Celine Dion started popping, that was because of Law.
And I mean, he ain't missed on Celine, not a little.
Has not.
Oh my God. He started with Celine like a little bit before the Vegas residency season. I mean, it was just...
And they linked through Zendaya because Celine's kids know Zendaya from Casey Undercover on Disney Plus, and she was like, who is responsible for her clothes? And that's kind of how they met, which is, I think, is really interesting. But he is the first Black stylist to be named as Hollywood's most powerful stylist, all these things. Anyway, we're talking about him because he posted on Instagram just a picture of a red stamp that said retired, basically said his cup is empty, he loves everybody he's worked with, blah, blah, blah. And that if this industry was just about the clothes and the looks, he would do it forever, but it's not. It's too political. There's a lot of lies and false narratives. So he's out, which we all know is like
a Jay-Z retirement.
Much like, let me get my funeral and flowers while I'm still alive. Like, see what people have to say about me. But people are attributing this to a little clip of video they saw of him and Zendaya showing up to the Paris, I want to say couture show for Louis Vuitton a couple of weeks ago, and him not having a front row seat. Mm-hmm. All of that is speculation. It's also not true. He did have a front row seat on the other side, but Zendaya was the last person to walk the step and repeat before the show. Everyone was already seated. So there was a misunderstanding there. That's not why
did he take the seat or did he leave?
He went to his assigned seat, which was on the other side.
He did go to it. Okay.
But I've seen a lot of people saying that it wasn't about that. There's been some other stuff going on. I think like Law had a show. Like there's been some other stuff going on.
There's
the chatter and stuff about Law. Because I'll be honest, I don't follow the fashion. Like I don't follow Diet Prada on Instagram. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't really do the fashion insider heavy like that. I'm kind of gleaning from the outside. But apparently it was more about kind of, I think, the chatter that generated around that clip about him. That was kind of like a straw that broke the camel's back.
Right.
The talk about him than more than the seating itself. And this is where I also want to say, like, the way I just said, I don't be in the fashion gossip like that. I need more people to acknowledge when they don't know what the fuck talking about with this stuff, because people have had all kinds of opinions on why Law done quit and all kinds of commentary on Ciara's dress on the Vanity Fair red carpet.
Damn. And don't even know that the party was a theme party.
Yeah, and also talking about, like, she wore it to the Oscars and she wore it to the, like, nobody, like...
She didn't go to the Oscars.
Yeah, like the it's a big ass Vanity Fair right behind her in the picture.
Also, the theme was sheer.
On the car, it was barely there. It was
barely there.
Slam and barely there. Also, there's a big ass VF on the carpet. There's not a big ass VF on the carpet on the Oscars carpet. Like, just know it's the same way we talk about when people start talking about the Met Gala red carpet. Just like know when you're a little bit outside your lane.
Yeah.
For a topic. And I know enough to know that I don't know enough about why Law might have quit. That's or might be saying he's retired. I doubt it's real. Like, ain't no way this nigga ain't gonna step into the Met Gala. Like, come on. He's too big. He's too popular.
And he's getting too many calls.
I'm wildly annoyed at everybody saying that he shouldn't have been front row. He shouldn't have been invited. He's just a stylist. That's not what this is. This person is an editor of British Vogue. Like, he's not just a stylist. These are accolades.
He's moving kind of into an Andre Leontali role.
For sure.
In Andre's absence. You know what I mean?
He is a curator.
Bigger than just stylist. Yeah.
And what he does is art. Like, and if you don't know about fashion, like, please just sit back and let the girls have it.
Because Law is one of the few stylists who, like, he himself will get photographed on a carpet. You know what I'm saying?
He just walked in a show. What's it? Oh, man. I can't remember. I think he just walked in the show like last week.
Talking about, because Paris Fashion Week just ended.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's doing. I didn't know much about him, and I'd be trying to keep up, but I didn't know much about him. But I just thought this was a really interesting story because of that clip, you know. Because then Dave was like, "Yeah, oh, seat right behind me, just sit right here," and he was just kind of like a bender.
But maybe he's just tired of the disrespect. This is also very much crunch time for getting together Met Gala looks. And so you need to preserve the relationships that you have. And if people are spreading rumors about him and blah, 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 like, he's dressing 10 people for the Met Gala carpet this year. That doesn't exist in regular stylist world. Like, these look they are preparing for as soon as the theme drops, which is 10 months out. So if now people are giving him pushback about, like, expecting something when he shows up somewhere, it's probably going to hurt some relationships that he needs to kind of move forward with what's, you know, the fashion Super Bowl. I don't think he's really retired. I think he might need a break.
Maybe.
But I need everybody to stop fucking talking about it.
I think it definitely is a case of his cup is empty right now and it might not feel worth it to him. But I do not see him letting Zendaya, who is like the it girl in fashion right now, go outside without him
for sure.
Met Gala or Carrie, who he's been, Carrie Washington, who he's been dressing lately, or, you know what I mean? Like, it's,
And you noticed the shift in her style. Because Carrie Washington was looking
high. She's been high fashion. Like,
for sure.
More daring, way more risky. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Peace of law, I guess.
Also, Sean had a lot to say in the group chat, and is now completely quiet on the topic. I came ready.
I be talking.
I came ready for beef.
When Law come around, I be talking. But when he leave, with you, I be quiet. When he leave, I be talking again.
Well, I'm going to say this: Anka was definitely ready to fight.
Yep.
If we were in proximity, I would have had to square up for sure.
Anka was tight.
So,
y'all ain't gonna be talking about no law.
No, I understand. Listen, I think I've explained this. I understand that these spaces can be stressful. These spaces can be a bit overwhelming. It is a lot that goes into it. You know, obviously, there were some things that you had mentioned that I wasn't necessarily aware of, right? So I'm looking at this on a fairly novice level of just sort of reading what I'm getting, right? Like, you know what I'm saying? It's not like when you read that name that all of these things are mentioned after the comma.
Yeah.
Like, that.
No,
those are
that's
not
fair.
The first, right? So
I'll put my nunchucks down.
So for me, you know, again, it takes a minute to kind of be the Andre Leontali-ish person. Like, so even though you're not a fashion person, like, you understand who that person was because you're introduced to him at when he's 20 years in, right? You know what I'm saying? When he's 20, 25 years into a 40-year career versus being introduced to that person when they are 6 years in. And I'm not saying, you know,
no, that's
what he is, but
yeah, but
that's really what I think you're seeing a lot of. And you know, we've worked with artists, particularly and closely, and we understand that even the artists, when they have teams around them, that those people are artists and they have to be managed as well to some degree. They have to be dealt with with a level of, you know, maybe not the same way you would, clearly, you know, you're going to deal with a Zendaya, you know, a little bit differently, right? Because that's just a different class of talent, quite frankly. But yeah, I mean, they're still artists, right? Like you, they're not, I get it. Like they're not the help, right? Like they're also, right? So I understand that. I mean, I, you know, God bless. I don't want no smoke with nobody. You know, so I'm good.
Peace to law.
Bro, you wanna mention this this John Morant thing?
What's happened now?
I mean, there's not really much to mention. He's basically being being let off suspension. He apparently has left the counseling,
the rehab
center that he entered. Well, they never said rehab. I see, this is where I get I don't like where journalism goes, because words mean things, right? Is this a rehab facility or is this a counseling facility? Is he checking into a detox sort of situation, or is he checking into a day program that he goes in and talks for a couple of hours? Like there are various ways, right? And there's no specificity to it. And frankly, I'm okay with that. Like, I don't need to know the specifics of how he's dealing with whatever his challenges are. I think that that's a personal thing. And I don't think we need to feel like we're owed that as a general public. I think your employers, particularly because you're a forward-facing person, should be privy to that sort of stuff, and your and whoever else you feel. But you know, outside of that, I don't. You know, so he basically leaves the counseling situation, and he's going to be eligible to play. Now,
so he gets suspended a total of 8 games, but I don't know if that's counting games he's already missed.
It's 8 games. It's going to be 8 games based on when he's eligible to come back. And this is not David Stern's NBA. We can definitely say that. Okay. Adam Silver is a little more. He's a little more new parent. Right. Like he's a little more. Let's hear both sides. Mm-hmm. How do we, you know, how do we adapt? How do we adjust? You know,
Adam Silver is the gentle parent, and David Stern was still whooping niggas.
Yeah, like he's definitely the uncle that gives you all the shit that your parents don't want to give you, right? And David Stern was the uncle who tells your parents everything you did wrong, right? And so we're clear on that. And listen, I do think that there's some measure of Adam Silver being a little too gentle in some of these cases.
I agree.
And maybe being a little too soft, but for lack of a better term. But I understand it, right? Like he needs to, you know, there's a measure of management shifting in the world, period, in how people deal with ultimately labor. And that's what these NBA players are. They're labor. And he has to make sure that that road is smooth. Do I think 8 games is enough? I don't know. That's hard for me to say because I don't know, you know, I don't know all the ins and outs or whatever caveats or whatever additional things that Ja has to do in order to come back into the good graces.
True.
So it's very difficult for me to just say that. I know he did a sit down with Jalen Rose.
Yeah.
Who I think I saw somebody mention on Twitter, like, why would they use Jalen Rose? And I'm like, Jalen Rose is probably the most connected person to have that conversation with him. Jalen Rose was a star very, very early on. Now, he wasn't as talented as Ja, but Jalen Rose was an absolute star. He understands what those hot lights mean. Mm-hmm. And Jalen has, I believe, admitted to having issues with alcohol in the past. Jalen Rose had gotten DWI, like maybe 8 years ago, 9 years ago, something like that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He has had struggles and he knows all of the ins and outs. Like he clearly understands and can probably be a mentor in this space in a way. So I think Ja probably only wanted to speak with him. I think they, I think his team probably made it so that he was not in a hostile environment. We know that Jalen is not going to make it hostile. Even if he's asking him tough questions, it's going to be done with love. Yeah. And, you know, I'm, you know, listen.
And Jalen was going to make the interview about him like Stephen A. would.
Exactly. And I'm not a fan. There's been two worlds about Ja. One is we're overreacting, and the other is like we're not doing enough. And I just think that one, like what he did was wrong, but he doesn't need to be on the FBI watch list, right? Yeah, like let's slow down.
Yeah, calm down a little bit.
We don't need to throw away a 23-year-old, 24-year-old kid, right? Yeah. Because he's made some very dumbass decisions. And they were serious issues, right? Like mm-hmm. we're talking about firearms. We're talking about violence. We're talking about serious acts that can get you in jail. So he wasn't fucking jaywalking. Okay.
Yeah.
And he also, you know, doesn't, you know, he wasn't hijacking planes. So let's find some middle ground with how we, you know, with how we see this, but you know, he'll be back. You know, he's a stud athlete, and employers Definitely. Will always, like, trust me, your Wall Street guy has had several ounces of cocaine on him, and his numbers are incredible. And guess what they do? They go take a week vacation.
Yep.
Okay, I know you pulled your dick out of, in the conference room,
yeah.
but we need you to sit tight for a little bit.
Yeah,
right. I'm just saying, people make concessions. People make concessions for talent all the time. Welcome to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're not making concessions for you, you're not that talented.
That's real.
Yikes. Did y'all see what Cameron said about
his dad? Yeah, I saw that this morning. He's like, yo.
He's not entirely wrong.
No, he wasn't.
I know that people have said, you know, Ja's a grown man and he can do what he wants. And, you know, like I said before, previously, like I totally understand that. This is just what it appears. And what we're seeing in real time is a dad who is all up in the videos dancing.
Mm-hmm.
He's getting all the, like he's enjoying all of the fruits of that labor, and not from what we're reading and what we're seeing, not giving any of the structure and guidance that is expected of a parent.
Yeah.
Watching that clip of him on a plane drinking excessively.
Like he was drinking that tequila like it was Snapple, bro.
Casamigos out any the standard,
crazy.
By any standard, there is no standard in which you can watch that clip and say that he is doing anything in moderation, that he is doing anything responsible, right? Like that was insane. And to know that his dad is right there.
How are you not? His dad would have been right on the floor next to me if I tried to drink Casamigos like that.
And you don't, that's a toleration that has come from years of drinking.
Absolutely.
That
is
not excess.
That is like you cannot just do that. You know what I'm saying? So I know he was coming. The reason that I was even saying that the employers are going to give him some concessions is because this has clearly been an issue.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way you're drinking like that and you were coming to practice not reeking of alcohol. I don't believe that.
Absolutely.
Especially playing ball. You ever play ball with a drunk nigga?
Yeah. Oh my God. Because it's coming
that
through
just
your pores.
Unlocked a memory because when we used to have to go on those long runs in the Army first thing in the morning, especially on a Monday, that whole formation would smell like a distillery because it would just be coming through your pores.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I wish him well. I would like to think that his dad is understands you know his position here. Hopefully his dad has some measure of influence. And can you control a 23-year-old kid? I mean, no, physically you can't make him stop doing anything, right? But that doesn't mean you don't try.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you sit idly by.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yo, Inka, I saw this clip on the news, on YouTube the other day where there were some people in basic training, and I want to know what they did this to you. So they had the do some. It wasn't really Oscar.
The girl question. With the pepper spray.
Yeah, did they do that?
That doesn't
to you?
Exist. I don't know what the what she.
Yo, they sprayed this pepper spray directly in her face, for? Like boosh, like a absolutely mad not. Pepper spray in her face. No. I was like, what the fuck?
I don't know that that was. I don't know. Let me not. Because there were people in actual army uniforms. Maybe that was some kind of ROTC or something. I don't know. But that's not something we trained for. We trained for the gas chamber, like where you, it was called equipment confidence, where you walk into a chamber full of tear gas with your pro mask on and sealed. Mm. They have you take it off and like walk around and shit in the tear gas. Then they have you redone it and reseal it just so you know, oh shit, this thing actually works.
Okay.
That's how we did.
I was like, damn, that's brutal. They had to leave this girl around because she literally couldn't see. Yeah, I was like,
that was. They had, they made her like a knife or something. She had to stab.
Yeah, she had to stab some people.
She did a backflip. It was a lot.
It was a, yeah, she did do a backflip. That's right. Yeah, she was doing the most, as the kids say.
That was my basic training experience.
Yeah.
Now I'm an old nigga, so I don't know about now, but like back then we did shit that made sense. I don't know what that is.
Peace to my girl Ice Spice, who's still popping on over the TikTok.
Who looked good in that what was that?
Oh, it was Phased magazine.
Phased magazine. Yeah, that's bread. I was like,
she looks great without the Annie wig on, which I don't know if that's her real hair.
That
or
blowout,
whatever,
but, that silk dress or whatever.
She looks nice. I got her help for Ice Spice. I like her a lot. Let's talk Oscars. Did y'all watch it?
I watched a good bit of it, yes.
Okay. Y'all watch,
I watched none of it. I haven't even gone back and watched. I ain't watched not a clip, not an acceptance speech, not a nothing.
Nah, I'm
good. I was asleep. And I heard I didn't miss much.
You did.
It was all right. I watched some. I watched the second half. That's when I was in New Orleans that day, so I got back late. My plane was crazy delayed. Yeah, it was okay. Everything All at Once won, pretty much swept their category.
They won 7.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they won 7 awards. They smashed.
Which, by the way,
I haven't seen that movie though.
It's so amazing. I'm surprised you haven't seen it, Jeff.
I want to see, because I'm a fan of
right
the show.
Your lane. Mm-hmm. The one thing I will incredible. Say for anybody listening who hasn't seen it yet, it takes a minute to get into. It takes a minute to realize what the fuck is going on. Just stick with it. Because once you're in it, you all the way in it. You don't realize what it's going to be at first. But like, just stick with it. It's so amazing. And what I will say, because I did watch Everything Everywhere All at Once, is like the anger about Angela losing to Jamie Lee Curtis, right?
Mm.
First of all, Jamie Lee Curtis is so good in this role, you forget it's Jamie Lee Curtis. Second
she
of
really
all,
is.
Jamie Lee Curtis has never won an Oscar. She's been acting her whole fucking life.
And she's a legacy kid.
And she's a legacy. And I think it's an incredible growth for her to go from Scream Queen to the Body, which she was for a long time, in the 80s, to like Oscar winner, right? Mm-hmm. But she's amazing. But also, like, Angela is the first person to ever even get nominated for Best Supporting Actress for a Marvel film.
Mm-hmm.
And she did a outstanding job. But she was Angela. You know what I'm saying? Like, I do believe that sometimes you want to see an actor stretch beyond what we already know they can do. And I get it. That the Academy owes Angela for What's Love Got to Do with It.
That
movie came out in the wrong year. And that's how the cards are dealt sometimes. Your movie come out on the wrong year. And you up against, because I can't remember who won that year, but whoever it was, I remember looking it up and being like, oh, yeah, okay, I get it.
I think it was right after they expanded the category from 5 films to 10, too.
Right, but they do owe Angela a statuette, just like they gave it to Whoopi for Ghost because they didn't give it to her for Color Purple. They owe Angela a statuette, but couldn't be over Jamie Lee. It couldn't.
Not in the Marvel Queen Ramonda role, no.
Yeah, no, it couldn't.
If we're talking about that category, though, I will say Stephanie Hsu over Jamie Lee Curtis in that movie, in that role,
Agreed, because she was amazing too.
She played three separate characters in that movie.
Which movie is that?
Two and a Half. Everyone, Everywhere, All at Once.
Oh, okay.
She played the daughter. She played the daughter when the daughter wasn't depressed. And she played like a weird... You gotta watch the movie to know what I'm talking about.
Okay.
But Stephanie Sue should have absolutely 10 toes down won that category. Just want to say that.
Yeah, so, you know, I saw most of Kimmel's monologue. Of course, there was some Will Smith jokes in there. And stuff like that.
I think they dragged that. That was too much. Like the end where he like turned the thing over, like number of Oscar shows without incident, changed it from 0 to 1 on the peg. Like that was all right.
They were reaching. It was okay. It was okay. But I love, as usual, every Oscar.
Sorry to interrupt. Angela Bassett was the first acting nomination for a Marvel role. Period. Not the first. Supporting actors, the first acting nomination
for anything, right?
And that's major in and of itself.
Yeah,
like that. Just wanted to say that. That's all.
And only I think the second person from any like comic book movie
to get nominated. I think so.
Yeah, because The Dark Knight was I think the first, and then this one. Yeah.
Okay.
Something like that.
Anyway, I love how the blacks got together to take the picture. They do that.
That's a tradition, though. That's
every year they kind of do that.
But I do always wonder how it goes. Who says, "Okay, black people, we going to take a clip"?
It looked like Jonathan Majors.
Jonathan Majors saying, "Black people, like when they get together,
and like when kicking all the white folks out the picture." So that was dope. Yeah. I saw some pictures last night. Lenny S. posted of what's called now the Gold Party, which is Jay-Z's party. That they do every year for the blacks. I'm sure there's white people.
Listen, Miss Tina looked good. I don't know if you saw any pictures.
Yeah, I saw her in the group picture, but she's way in the back in that one.
She looks good.
Miss Tina got it together.
Let me go look at her Instagram.
Yeah, so.
Shout out to older ladies in general. Karen Huger from Potomac posted that.
Karen Huger. Big.
Yeah. Killing them.
Bro, what you said, Ray, she gone. She belongs to the streets.
She outside, Ray. She outside. I ain't saying she belongs to the streets, but she definitely outside, Ray. Ray don't give a fuck.
We don't care.
Ray, get Ray his green Jello cup at 5:30, and make sure he got a little vodka in the refrigerator.
You know what I'm saying?
So get a little taste later on.
A little later on, put him to sleep.
Ray is definitely a brown liquor nigga. Don't disrespect Ray like that.
I think Ray also still wondering why he ain't living in Florida playing 18 holes of golf every day with his homeboys.
I think Ray is shuffleboard age.
Ray can't get out there and swing, brother. Ray got to be
80. Yeah.
Or high 70s.
Karen turns 60 next year. I think Karen's 59.
Nigga, 80 is like around the corner. Yeah, if he ain't right on the corner, it's right there, bro.
I think their age difference is like 17 or 18 years. Yeah, so he's got to be.
It's closer to 78, 79. He right there, you know. So God bless Ray. Oh,
and shout out to Eternal Vacation attendee Ashanti.
Ashanti spends a good 200 days a year at somebody's resort, and I'm not mad.
Campy. And she looks phenomenal.
Dream life. Dream.
She looks phenomenal, too. God bless her.
So good.
Yeah, yeah. So that's about it. I ain't really got nothing else for us.
I got some TV stuff I want to mention.
Okay.
I finished The Practice all 8 seasons.
Really?
That's a great show. I did not know that Boston Legal is the spinoff of The Practice.
I knew that and forgot. And I don't even watch The Practice.
And I'm not watching Boston Legal. And then I am now at the end of season 2 of New Amsterdam, which is the show that came on after This Is Us when This Is Us.
So wait, is it good? Because it keeps popping up in my suggestions. And I'm like, huh?
It is Grey's Anatomy for people who are tired of Grey's Anatomy. It takes place in a hospital. It's a lot less incestuous than Grey's Anatomy was, but it is about a medical director who comes in and kind of shakes up this public hospital in New York, and it is incredible. The stories are realistic. Every episode is not somebody being impaled on the drive shaft of somebody's car. Like, it's not, you know, like at the end of every season of Grey's Anatomy, there was like a plane crash or some shit that the doctors go through. It's not that. It's just great stories inside a hospital in New York City. Like, I love it. I'm in.
Okay.
I'm watching it now. And then Ted Lasso is back. Very exciting stuff.
I still got to catch up on Ted Lasso.
It's the best show. I love it.
It's a good,
clean show, like Sean always says. It's good. It's just good entertainment. And then what's the other thing? Bel-Air season 2 is back on Peacock.
Oh, it's on?
We're like 3 episodes in.
Okay. Not as good.
I might tap out. It's okay. I love the star, the kid.
Mm.
And I love Coco Jones. Everybody else on that show is getting on my nerves. Mm. I don't know if I'm going to make it the whole season. But, beautiful gowns.
Beautiful gowns.
Snowfall, if you guys have not been watching, has been incredible this season so far. I would suggest catching up. But the way that they have really had character development, like watching the characters evolve and change over time, has been like phenomenal. And it's really, I mean, we all know what the show is about, and we know that they're trying to sort of encapsulate just how the drugs obviously tears up communities and things of that nature, but also how it really changed, how that drug game changed people. Like, it literally changed their makeup, and what they valued and what they fought for and all of those sorts of things. And sort of watching those developments has been really, really interesting. Wu-Tang is...
How was Wu-Tang? Because I ain't watched it at all.
It is... It's doing 95 downhill with no breaks right now.
I'm because surprised it's the they went season. Into a season 3, to be honest.
Well, I think what they did,
because now they're successful, right? Now the group is kind of popped.
Mostly what you do is you go in, you probably pitch a show with a couple of episodes written. You have an idea, you kind of outline the next couple of seasons. Usually they go to 5 seasons, right? And I don't know that they did that with this one, because the success was like, it was really, really sharp and really, really fast on how the story developed. But I thought, okay, so they'll just kind of maybe pull out some things and, dig into some things here and there. This last season, which is season 3, is the final season. They were not
good
to wall creatively, and kind of like are, in my opinion, they're throwing spaghetti on the wall and they're being a little more artsy than I think is necessary, because Wu-Tang is actually a great story. Mm-hmm. Like when you dig into all of the incestuous relationships that they had and all of those sorts of things, like, it's really a good story. And these niggas really made a phenomenon and changed. What they're not doing here is they're not showing how that group changed how other record labels, labels signed and how they went about signing artists after that, because it changed. Mm-hmm.
They changed the business. And like, so I had tapped out on Wu-Tang, and I was a huge advocate of season 1 because it was so well done. And it was such a great origin story, right? So season 1 is the origin story. For those who don't watch it, season 1 ends with Steve Rifkin leaving them a message because he wants to sign them, right? But guys have decided to like call it a day. So season 2 picks up with the beginning of what we know as like Wu's career. Like, we had like RZA's failed solo joint, like all of that. So I really thought that they would stop after season 2, like get us to the success
what we know, yeah,
and then like drop off. But like, Jason was watching it last night, and it's like they're trying to get ODB's album done, and Meth is blowing up, and
the time yes,
recording You're All I Need, I'll Be There for You, and I'm like, why are we here? We don't need to be here.
They totally fucked up. They're totally screwing that timeline up. You have no idea in terms of how you're watching a program. Again, because it's a linear program, you're following them in a single line.
Right.
And they're a little all over the place with that. Also something that I've mentioned about maybe BMF, right? Like those timeline gets very warped. Nigga, is it 87 or 91? Because
and I find that always happens when we're talking about retrospectives that are based on real time events. Like people take the beginning and take so much time with it. And then as time goes on, they start compressing and warping shit.
That's a little bit of marriage between, I'm sure, network executives and what they want to see, what the Q rating has been. Oh, so, you know, this is we're getting bigger responses from these people. We want to see them more, which I would have to say must explain the Lamar shit, because the Lamar storyline of BMF is like comically ridiculous. And, right. And so, yeah, I mean, you get some of those. And I mean, at this point, you know, you're leaning into the nostalgia with BMF, and you're leaning into the nostalgia with Wu-Tang.
Yeah.
But basically what they're trying to do is wrap up all of these stories in a neat bow to try and give you this idea. And I'm just like, I would have liked to seen a little more exploratory nature of, you know, some of these relationships, because like we're in episode 7 and they're successful and no one can get a hold of them, and right. I'm like, that probably would have been great like episode 2 of this season,
right.
So we can really sort of see how this maps out, because like, what are you going to do?
We know where it ends up, and that's the thing, not to go off on a whole tangent, but that's the thing I think they're not taking advantage of. Like, season 1 premiered not too long after the Wu Doc premiered. So when we saw the Wu Doc, we saw the tension between all of them and RZA, right? Like all of them and RZA. And this is the point where you should be able to start to show the seeds of that
in
a real way. But like, because even though RZA was an architect, it's now gone beyond that, where they're like, you know, like RZA and Supreme, like, y'all, not, isn't that his brother's name?
Divine.
One of them fucking guys are earth names. RZA and Divine, like, there's resentment there because RZA and Divine really were like, this is our shit. Like, y'all here, but this is our shit, you know? And even though they did build it up, build Wu to be this global phenomenon. So, but I'm like watching, and there's like a scene with Ray and Ghost, where it's like, they act like they coined the term mafioso rap. You know what I'm saying? It's just like little shit like that, where I'm just kind of like...
Yeah, they were, yeah. Yeah, and you know, God bless, the actors are doing about as good a job with as they can with the materials. They've been really good.
Yeah, the actors are killing it. I will say
The actors are really, really good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, BMF, on the other hand... Lovely gowns.
I cannot get past the acting in the Power Cinematic Universe to watch those shows. I have tried.
Listen, you're watching for entertainment value, not necessarily like this incredible art, and that's fine too, right? Like that's fine too. So, you know, God bless. I'm pretty sure they're going to be picked up for season 3.
Carisha,
they killed Carisha on this fucking brand.
The TikToks that are coming from that scene that she did are A1 perfect media for me to consume.
Yeah, God bless it, Carisha. You gonna be all right. You get better.
I love her. She's having the time of her life.
She is.
She's getting executive producer credits on shit.
I love it.
I'm happy.
Is she still dating? Her and Puff still dating, allegedly?
Who cares? Like, nobody.
I mean, they were just so public for a while. I don't know.
She's making the bet. Whatever they're doing,
I'm not sharing my next man.
God bless. I want to say
I have one last shout out before we wrap. So, I do not know the dude's name, I'll find it, but somebody reposted him onto my timeline last night, and I was so tickled. There's this white guy, this podcaster, who is talking to his fellow people about like how he is newly obsessed with HBCU cheerleaders. And
I saw that.
One way, But he started doing, he started repeating one of the Stomp and Shake Champs chants, where it was like, you know what, no problems, you just talk like you do. And he's doing the clap, he's doing the move, he's doing the whole thing, because he was like, I liked one video, and now my algorithm is, because of the algorithm,
yeah, keep feeding him.
And like, but he really was into the whole attitude, like the all of it. Yeah. And I was so pleased, because I thought it was about to be like, about the body and the moves and the whatever, but it was about the chants and the attitude.
And the audience participation and the sound of the wood bleachers. And
yeah, like, he was like, you know, everybody just went crazy. And you could tell, like, he really has a new appreciation for just the whole Stomp and Shake.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
him doing the chair took me out. I was like, let me follow this man. This is funny.
I want to give a last shout out to Black China, because she got her stuff all removed.
Undoing all her surgeries.
Yeah, her body and her fillers in her face.
This is a trend that I'm getting behind. I appreciate that, you know, and we know that this ebbs and flows, that different body types are coming into style at different times. But I appreciate going closer to natural and closer to the skinny BBL look right now.
The over-the-top cartoon shit.
Yeah, I think this is also a result of getting extreme body modifications at a young age. Like, because I'm not anti-body mod, but for some of these women, they were doing it for a certain thing. They're doing it because they're dancing. They're doing it because they're, you know, IG model or video model or whatever. And now that phase of their life is over. And they may be doing it for that. They may be doing it for health reasons. They may be doing, you know, but I do think that when you have a lot of work done before your body is completely settled, let's say, there comes a time where you start to reevaluate that a little bit. And that seems to be part of what Black China's going through. Go ahead, Inka.
I think also her seeing the caliber of work that is being done to people in Hollywood versus what she was getting before.
Down in the hood of Miami. Yeah,
because I think looking at and not to pick on her, because I think she looks absolutely stunning both ways. But looking at just the subtle transformation of Savannah, LeBron's wife, to what she looks like now, and knowing that, like, you don't need Thriller, you can get threads put in and you can get, you know, this kind of work done that isn't going to continue to warp in your body as you get older. I think may have informed this decision, but I'm happy for her. I hope she lands somewhere that she is happy with. She's a beautiful girl either way.
Yeah,
and she is a beautiful girl. That's the other thing. And I appreciate her transparency with it as well.
Yeah, it's dope.
So can we just take microphones away from Tokyo Toni altogether? Because her TikTok is a mess.
Tokyo Toni. DC's finest, boy. Sheesh. Oof. So on that note, we're going to wrap it up. If y'all ain't got nothing else to say.
Love you guys. Sorry for scaring Sean in the group chat. I wasn't really going
to fight you. Yeah, I'm
going to be fighting for my life tomorrow. I'm ready.
When are we taping?
We got to get this popping, you know?
Lavos is my guy, man. Come on.
We'll see y'all next week. We'll see y'all next week. Ain't nothing else new happen. See y'all next week.
All right,
later.
Peace.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook, send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.